This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air. It's Glenn in for John today. We've got a big hour lined up for you to get your day underway, touching base with a variety of folks and a variety of things, including Bishop James Wall joins us from Gallup, New Mexico, with a look at the immigration situation at the border and what the church is and ought to be doing about that and how we can help as well. Apple taking some new and kind of amazing steps to protect kids with the iPhone. Are they protecting your security? Mark Mastriani investigates that for us. And Brian Gibson helps save lives, doing sidewalk counseling outside of abortion centers and training others to do that with Pro-Life Action Ministries. You can find out more at plam.org. Brian Gibson joining us for a look at a variety of things that are happening in the world of pro-life news. Coming up in the next hour or two, if you can stick around for more, Jason Adkins from the Minnesota Catholic Conference talks about how Catholics and government can interact as we learn to make our presence known and see what issues have had success at the Minnesota State Capitol, for example, and what still needs some work. Also, Father John Gordon in the coming hour as we talk about friendship. As again, we'll get underway with Brian Gibson joining us in just a moment here. Brian will have the latest in pro-life news. Pro-Life Action Ministries, a great website you can go to. Brian, for years, over 30 years now with Pro-Life Action Ministries, busy saving babies to the tune of over 3,000 that have been saved, located first in the Twin Cities and also Orlando, and doing training around the world. Does a lot of work in terms of sidewalk counseling. He's out there himself each and every week. And not only is he out there and doing that training, but being that last line of defense as folks are making their way toward these abortion centers, handing info to them, talking to them, having to, you know, help them run the gauntlet with people that are out there from the abortion centers trying to take away the materials that they had been handed, trying to separate the folks trying to save lives from those that are trying to make their way in and make that decision not for life. Any news yet, Mariano, if we have Brian on the line? All right, still waiting to get a hold of Brian as well this morning, and so looking forward to that in just a moment here as we get underway with Morning Air. John Morales enjoying some vacation for this week, and then he will be back in full force next week, which we are looking forward to. Having a few technical challenges on the phones this morning and doing a little battle as well with some computers, but forward to touching base with Brian Gibson in just a moment. There's a church in Maine that is asking the Supreme Court to block restrictions against houses of worship during the coronavirus outbreak. Calvary Chapel of Bangor, Maine, filed a petition on Wednesday. It says limiting the church's ability to hold religious services while exempting other activities and businesses for being essential violates its rights under the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. It cites other cases in which the Supreme Court has sided with other religious organizations that pushed back against similar restrictions. The petition said despite abundant precedents from the Supreme Court, Maine ignored it and continued to impose discriminatory and unconstitutional restrictions on religious worship services long after it became clear they were unconstitutional. Elsewhere, again, like we said, we'll be talking with Mark Mastriani before the hour is through. Is Apple facing some backlash for its plan to scan images in the iCloud for sexual abuse, the goal to match photos against a list from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children? Some calling out to the tech giant for potential security and privacy issues. That with Mark Mastriani coming up in just a minute. But now, again, happy to say hello to Brian Gibson from Pro-Life Action Ministries. Good morning, Brian. Great to have you along today.
Good morning. Good to be on the show with you this morning.
Well, I know you got some issues, including those involving the administration and conscience rights you want to make us aware of this morning as well.
Well, several issues with the administration, of course, and they just continue to grow. We have a problem where there is an attempt to force medical personnel to be involved in abortions. And so that's been a growing concern and continues to be out there. And of course, we've got the funding for abortion, where our taxpayer dollars are going to be used to pay for abortion to the federal level, which has been kept at bay since 1976 with the Hyde Amendment. So that's been taken away in the current funding bills that are taking place.
What has it been like to try and battle? We've had states on a state-by-state basis, you know, pass pro-life legislation, but the current federal government situation with the administration has been much tougher.
Well, that's the contrast that we're seeing right now is at the state-by-state level. Actually, in the last 2 years, we've seen more state legislation pass than ever before. And so we're hitting record numbers as far as states across the country, both putting forward legislation as well as passing legislation that has more protections on the unborn than ever before. Texas has got 4 or 5 pieces of legislation they've passed, and all around the country, other ones as well. But at the federal level, we just see it's a juggernaut to make abortion, have it so that we're to try and proclaim it as healthcare, that it is something that must be funded by our federal dollars, something that must be adhered to by people working in the medical professionals in particular, required to be available through insurance programs. One of the latest ones with the insurance programs with the ACA, there's been an effort to hide the fact that our insurance programs are paying for abortions, then hide the fact that even if you don't have a program that would pay for abortions, then you would still be paying for it even if you don't have it in your insurance program. Things that were purposefully made excluded when the original ACA was passed back under Obama. In the earlier 2012, 2014, something like that. So the Biden administration has taken things to levels that are just beyond what we've ever seen before. The Pelosi Congress is doing as well. So a very, very difficult time coming out of Washington, D.C.
Talk about where things stand with the Hyde Amendment right now in terms of that taxpayer funding for abortion as well.
Well, it has been virtually stripped from the funding bills. The current bills, as they're working their way through, the House already passed it. It's before the U.S. Senate. Fortunately, in the Senate, there's the need to get that 60 vote mark, and we have not only do we have the Republicans holding it together, but we have a Democrat or two who are jumping ship, so to speak, from the Democrat majority, and Joe Manchin in particular from West Virginia has made some very strong statements that he will not vote for anything that eliminates the Hyde Amendment. That's probably the saving point at this point in time as far as the Hyde Amendment goes. So in the House, it's already been eliminated, and the president wants it gone. Again, the Hyde Amendment is what prohibits federal tax dollars from paying for elective abortions in the United States.
Brian Gibson with Pro-Life Action Ministries giving us the scoop on what pro-lifers are facing in terms of legislation from the federal government as well. The Biden administration has allowed a hospital to force a nurse to partake in an abortion, ignoring federal law protecting Christians and conscience rights.
Yeah, that's where we're really getting troubling right now with what they're pulling and doing. Federal law has made it very clear, as well as many states have laws that are supposed to protect the conscience rights of medical professionals as well as most all people, if not all people within their states or across the country. And it's longstanding, the idea that you could be forced to do something that's in direct conflict with your deeply held religious views. That concept is just being obliterated with the efforts that are taking place. In this particular case, it was at a university hospital. So it's a public hospital. And because of that, apparently the Biden administration sided with the university hospital, threatening to fire this nurse if she were to not partake in the abortion process. And then when she brought suit in accord with the federal law, the Justice Department under the Biden administration again sided with the university hospital. So she's kind of getting hit at it from double angles here as she tries to continue to protect her rights.
Well, not only conscience rights, protecting life, the right thing to do for all involved in medicine, but this is going to, you know, keep good people out of that profession.
Where there's that, that certainly has been a problem that has been coming forward as we've watched the idea of religious freedoms being impinged upon over recent years. And of course, as we see this effort by the Biden administration to normalize the idea of killing innocent children. So yes, that would be one of the backlashes that would happen with that. You know, we have a lot of people sitting in those professions right now who have to say, you know, what is the line that I'm not willing to cross over, even if it means I'm going to lose my livelihood, my career, the passion I have for caring for humans and human beings and their in their illnesses and so forth. And that's a terrible place to be putting people, people who have made their whole lives trying to do good for others. And then telling them that if you don't do this evil thing, then you can't do the good that you've been trained to do for your whole life.
Along those lines as well, University of Louisville expelling a student who opposes abortion?
Yes, we're starting to see that coming at the university level. Again, coming from public colleges, public universities, where everything from that. Now this is the medical school, and this particular student was heading up a student life group for the medical school. So it was a student medical students for life, or a name of that sort. And he had brought in a speaker a couple years ago that the university leadership did not like. They did a lot of things to try and prohibit him from having this speaker come into the university to speak. Finally, he was able to pull it off, but ever since then, he seems to have had a black mark on him. And here he is. I believe he would be graduating this coming May. So he's almost done, and now has been expelled from the university. Again, another one of those federal lawsuits that have to be taken up, where there shouldn't even be something having to be taken up.
You know, it's interesting the reaction at the college level to the abortion issue. I can still remember back in dinosaur times, the early 80s actually, had a speech class, in the summer. I was, you know, doing as much radio as I could get my hands on, and so kind of going to school year round. And it was a small class in the summer, and we all had to give a speech to the group about a particular topic. I don't even remember what mine was, but I remember there was somebody there who had a table full of the instruments of death related to abortion, and was giving a speech that went on and on, well past the allotted time, and he didn't care about that. He was there to make a point. And he might even have been a med student, you know, or at least studying some of that stuff. And that sticks with me still to today. And boy, did that infuriate the teacher, and not just that he went beyond his time. Yeah, so interesting, but so brave of folks to do that. Talking to a brave guy this morning, doing sidewalk counseling and teaching others to do the same, saving babies for over 30 years, Brian Gibson with Pro-Life Action Ministries. Also, in the last year, as COVID has affected everything, we kind of wondered how that would affect abortion. And as some reports start to trickle in from different states that tally the number of abortions, what does the nationwide picture look like right now, Brian?
Well, with what has come in so far, we're basically seeing that the number of abortions went up during the 2020, during the COVID year. Not that we aren't completely done with it yet, but during 2020, the numbers went up. But what's really interesting is that states were during the lockdowns, because we had that period of time, remember, where everyone was told to stay at home, and we all went, you know, everything was closed. And in many states, I should say, in a handful of states, the governors, when they locked everything down, that included closing the abortion facilities. But then states like ours in Minnesota, and as well as, again, many others around the United States, where the governor allowed the abortion facilities to remain open, even though they wouldn't allow elective surgery, that was the case here, those states all saw an increase. And the increase in those states more than made up for, at least as we're seeing in preliminary reports right now, for the lack of abortions taking place in the states that closed down. So that's getting to be the trend that we're seeing across the country. Right now, though, we only have a handful of states who we really have numbers from. Many states reporting are lagged behind up to two and a half years from when the abortions were taking place. So it may be a year or two before we actually see the full picture.
Talk about another wrinkle in abortion as more and more abortions get done chemically as opposed to medically in a clinic. And it's not like taking an aspirin by any means. And more of this activity has been legalized by allowing distribution through the mail without as much medical contact as previously was required.
Yeah, this is a very disturbing trend that we're seeing. First of all, the number of chemical abortions, what we call the abortion pill, increased dramatically in the past year. Again, from what we're seeing from these preliminary numbers that we're seeing from several states. In my home state where I'm at in Minnesota, we saw it going from Planned Parenthood doing about 40% of their abortions being chemical abortions, jumping up to 60 or so. So it's quite a swing. Again, the Biden administration is doing the worst that they can do. And so the Biden FDA, using the excuse of the COVID-19 pandemic, suspended all the rules that are in place for the safety of women. And I think that's the thing I want people to really understand is that the rules that the FDA have around the abortion pill recognize and realize that when these are given to women, that there are conditions and circumstances where these are extraordinarily dangerous for the woman. Everything from excessive hemorrhaging to death. And so those rules have been suspended under the guise of COVID-19. And we now have abortion facilities that are mailing the abortion pills out without ever seeing the woman. So they can't do blood work to find out if there's a blood issue with them that could be counterindicative that they should ever take these chemicals. They can't do an ultrasound. They can't find out whether it's an ectopic pregnancy. If a woman has an ectopic pregnancy, there's a high likelihood she could die from taking these pills. As well as several other things that happen when you have a physical exam taking place. Again, this is for the woman's safety entirely. The pill is designed to kill the baby, and the baby is going to be killed unless we can have that opportunity to intervene with a reversal process. But, overwhelmingly, that's what's going to happen. And so not only are we making sure that babies are being killed by abortion, but now we're threatening the lives, physical harm to women who are taking these.
And a good example of what that experience looks like is in the movie Unplanned, which you can find many places. The story of Abby Johnson, the former abortion industry worker who came to see the light and is a great pro-life speaker now as well. And again, it's not like taking an aspirin at all, as much as it might be soft-pedaled. It's all the time we have for right now. Thank you so much for your great work on the sidewalks and training others to save lives as well. That's Brian Gibson. You can find out more about his work with Pro-Life Action Ministries at plam.org. Thank you, Brian. We continue. There's more of Morning Air coming up. Still to come this hour, we'll talk with Bishop James Wall from Gallup, New Mexico, getting a look at the situation at the border. Up next, your privacy and an effort to make things safer for kids online. Look at what Apple is doing. Mark Mastriani joins us next as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Sure plays a mean pinball.
I love to wake up playing ear guitar, and you can join us this morning. Thanks for being along for Morning Air. It's Glenn for John this hour. Our story corner is still to come. Bishop James Wall joins us before the hour is through right now. We're talking about that new thing that Apple wants to do with your phone to save kids, to make things safer for kids, looking out for child abuse and more. Mark Mastriani talks to us about tech on a regular basis here, including looking at this amazingly new development here. Is it safe? Is it the way we want to keep things safe? Mark, great to have you along today.
Glenn, it's great to talk to you. How are you doing today?
Doing well, doing well. Boy, help us to understand what Apple is up to. Maybe the intent is good, the way they're going about it. Does that scare us a little bit? Tell us more about how this technology is supposed to work.
Yes. So of all the big tech companies, Apple has a reputation for self-proclaimed reputation and a good one. They've earned a good reputation in end-to-end message encryption. If you are on an Apple device and you send a message to another Apple device, the only people that can see that message are the people on both sides of that message. So it's end-to-end encrypted using their own platform, and they, Apple, never have their data on their servers. The data is always on the device of the sender and the receiver, never held by Apple in between. So how does that relate to this brand new set of safety measures? This is where it gets a little bit more complicated. We'll step through it nice and easy. They have three new security protocols that they're putting out, again, under the banner, a very good banner, of child safety. Okay? So they're calling it, they don't have a special, it's kind of an in-between release. It's not part of any major OS or operating system launch. It's not part of any brand new product launch. It's an evolution or an update to all their existing systems. Okay, so what's their goal? Their stated goal, they want to protect children on its platform. So how does that happen? How do they think they can be a participant in the children protection process? There's three measures. The most controversial is the third one, so I'll hustle to the third one quickly. The first one makes sense. It's expanded guidance in Siri and search. If a kid is using an Apple device and searches on a very problematic term or phrase, the Siri will pop up a message and say, "Are you sure you want to search on that? That is something that is mature content." Okay? That wasn't in place before. So this is 2021, and this is the first time that Siri, the voice-activated search, or the search bar itself, will actually pop up and interrupt a kid from doing a search that could be, you know, rated X or rated R. Next, there is image detection. So if they are a child is part of a family share bundle or iCloud account, and they are sending or receiving an image that is problematic, that is something that Siri, that Apple will throw up a message saying, are you sure you want to send that image? Here's where it gets, the devil is in the detail here, Glenn, and that is, how does Apple know what's in the image if they're not end-to-end encrypted, right? What Apple hangs their hat on is having your back by encrypting and never even storing your message. But how do they know if an image is obscene or suggestive if they can't store it? So what tech experts are saying is that this is where Apple is going to get into the slippery slope. If they can see an image, even for a good reason, then they're going to somehow temporarily or in a flicker of a second hold your data in order to process it, in order to determine its safety. Now, all of these measures, you opt in or you can opt out. But that just gets into the discussion that we have here frequently on Tech Tuesday, prudence. Do we give our children these devices? How do we give them guidance? And do we have control, or do the children have control, or does Apple have control? For, you know, just good solid fundamentals, I wouldn't suggest someone provide a device that is open to the internet, that is messaging to other kids or adults, unless they're of, you know, good, sound moral judgment, right? That age is based on the family. But Apple has said that when you create these family accounts, so I'll share with you, I do have a family account with a couple of my children. My children are using iPads for their school, and they're part of my Apple iCloud account. So I have authority and control over what they can download, what apps they can use, for how long. I can see their app usage on a daily basis. So that's just good, solid fundamentals of prudence applied to technology. What Apple says here is that since Apple already has the age of the child within these family share bundle accounts, like the one I have, they can, the parent who's in control of that account can turn on and off these safeguards. So I'm not here to say this is either good or bad. I want everyone to be aware of it so that you can be prudent and you can use good judgment based on the kids in your family to apply these new safety measures or to opt out.
Mark Mastriani joining us for Tech Tuesday today on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio, looking at Apple's new moves to protect kids. Mark, this on one hand, wow, it's one of the tech giants trying to do some good things in terms of protecting kids. But what's your first blush impression at the control it would give them of the technology in our hands?
You know, I think it's helpful. I applaud their attempt to dive in and to help us parents protect our kids, because we're the protectors of our kids. Apple is just a participant in that process. I applaud the attempt, but I'm not sure if it was applied well. The fact that they can see an image and can detect if it's obscene, wow, that is powerful in an effort to protect all of us. But once we're talking here about applying this technology to, you know, 13 to 17 year olds, 13 to 18 year olds, that means we must engage, right? It's just another one of those pieces of evidence, a piece of data that tells us we got to get sharp. We've got to be knowledgeable. We can't just let Apple do the parenting for us. We've got to understand what these features do and what they can't do. It gets to a bigger topic of data, and there's another story in the news that's related as well. do we want TikTok on American Airlines flights, right? Senator Marco Rubio from Florida is pushing back on American Airlines. Why would you offer TikTok on flights specifically marketed towards kids? It has to get back to data. Why is it so important, and why is TikTok so controversial? TikTok is controversial because a Chinese-owned business, ByteDance, takes and collects data on every user on the TikTok platform. Images, facial recognition images, usage information, IP address, which is your internet protocol address, where you're accessing TikTok from. That's your location. So what's problematic here from Apple's new security measures is consistent and problematic with TikTok being offered on American Airlines flights to kids. It's data. Where is our kid data going? We should be in more control. There are countries around the world who put more safeguards in place around the data that's out there. I think, again, it just encourages us. It's almost like a back to school story. We should definitely roll up our sleeves, take an hour each week, learn about what our devices our kids have access to and they're using, how data is generated, and how that data is stored and secured. That's good parenting right now in 2021. We should be involved, we should be hands-on, and not scared of this technology. These things are actually user-friendly. They are designed for us to actually go into the settings, whether it be a laptop, a mobile tablet, an Android device, or an Apple device. Settings are designed in a straightforward and simple way. You want to turn off your location. That's one of the common themes if you're a frequent Tech Tuesday listener across the years. I recommend turning off location-based services for two reasons. Number one, you consume so much more battery when the GPS, Global Position System radio, is active on any of your devices. But two, once the device is locating you, your location is being tracked, and then services are being marketed and advertised to you based on that location. So turn off location unless you're using location for navigation, which is the appropriate use for that service. But
are we kind of immune to worrying about that almost in our quests for that momentary fame that we get through so many of these apps that we use? We've just kind of maybe thrown up our hands and saying, well, you know, we know our phone is listening. If somebody in the room says a certain topic and wow, you know, 10 minutes later, there's an ad for that, even if it's just a machine listening for certain words, you know, have we kind of just given up on worrying about that when maybe we still ought to be a little cautious?
Yeah, I think awareness is the first level. We should definitely be aware, Glenn. Number two, we should definitely make a conscious choice whether we want this constant listening to be occurring. You can turn off devices, right? There can be a device-free hour during dinner time with the family. There can be device-free Sundays. The answer to your question, in my opinion, is awareness is step one, engagement is step two. And my encouragement to all of our listeners is engagement starts with being one step, clicking one layer into your settings on all of your family's devices, understanding what the device is pre-configured out of the box to do, and make a conscious choice. Do you want these devices turned on or off for data storage, microphone always listening, location-based services always on? These are the first layer of engagement that I recommend everyone try to. It's your homework assignment for Tech Tuesday.
Oh, that's very good. We need to be aware that we do have some control yet in the midst of all of this, and to exercise that as well. And any final thoughts on the new Apple situation there, Mark?
Yeah, I applaud them for their attempt. I think they have good intent. It's just that slippery slope that we have to be aware that if Apple starts by looking at our images in our messages that we're sending for the reason of safety, the next step is the text, the words that we use, the language that we use, and how is that going to be stored and used for future reference. We control our data. It's okay to get involved and engaged. You shouldn't be afraid. Dive right in.
Very good. Appreciate the good insight as that world continues to evolve. We continue to appreciate your advice on Tech Tuesday. Mark Mastriani joining us here on Morning Air. Morning Air continues. Bishop James Wall from Gallup, New Mexico, up next with a look at religious freedom. Our new story corner for the day on the way as well. All coming up as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Morning Air continues here. It's Glenn in for John today on Morning Air. Thanks so much for joining us. Coming up after the top of the hour, Father John Gordon joins us. We'll take a look at friendship and how Mary can be that teacher of friendship. Jason Adkins from the Minnesota Catholic Conference dealing with Catholics and government coming up in the next hour as well. Story corner on the way. But right now we're happy to say hello to Bishop James Wall, the Bishop of Gallup, New Mexico. Bishop Wall, great to have you along this morning.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. I know today we want to dig a little bit into religious freedom. And boy, this really rears its head when it comes to some of the things we've been talking about earlier this hour in terms of abortion and how the administration looks at that and allows or doesn't allow or supports or doesn't support those that have been locked in battle in medical institutions, trying to protect their conscience rights as well. That's just one part of religious freedom, which seems, sadly, Bishop Wall, to be under attack in so many areas.
You're right. And I think one of the things that we have to be very, very careful, and I know Relevant Radio does this very well, is that we don't reduce religious freedom to kind of freedom of worship. That seemed to be a trend over about the past 10, 15, 20 years. And worship is something, specific, as opposed to religious freedom is something where we have, as our first freedom, where we're able to completely and faithfully practice our faith and live out our faith and not do anything, as you mentioned, not do anything that would go ahead and violate our rights, our conscience rights. And so I think that's very important when we see things that are starting to creep into legislation or some of the things going on in our country or even throughout the world that start to violate that. And a big one is always the sanctity of life, you know, so that we don't cooperate with something that's an intrinsic evil act. It's always wrong. And that we are able to live out that truth that all life is sacred, all that everyone is created in the image and likeness of God. Those are basic truths. And so I think religious freedom for us as Catholics helps us to really live that out.
Is part of that saying, well, freedom to worship is just fine on behalf of some administration officials, kind of not understanding the full scope, or is it just kind of, hey, we can kind of get by limiting it to that, because that sounds like what religion is about, just that freedom to worship, when we know it is so much more?
I think it's both. I think it's both of that. I think part of it is that not understanding that and trying to reduce it, as Catholics will say, you know, to 1 hour a week, although it's much, much more than that. But I think also it's also an effort by some to try to maybe silence the Catholic voice and silence the truths of our faith, and to try to say that you know, well, that's just something that's solely private and it shouldn't be brought into the public domain. But that's false. That's a false approach to it. And so no, I think it's a couple of those things. I think they're kind of combined. And I think for us as Catholics to really live out our faith in a very public way and to practice, you know, to take advantage of religious freedom, it means that our faith has to be public. It's just not simply something that's private. It's not, as the scriptures say, it's not something to be hidden. You know, it should be a light that gives light to all the room, and the room being our country.
Well, Bishop Wall, this really kind of came up in terms of during the COVID shutdown. We had several bishops in different parts of the country who had to speak sometimes rather forcefully to government officials to say, hey, this is our right, and we need to be able to go ahead safely, but to be able to go ahead and do some of these things.
We did. We had a real champion here in New Mexico, too. We had Bishop Baldacchino down in Las Cruces. He was one of the first guys to really push back on some of the things that I think eventually we started to see as unnecessary. And we had a lot of other things going on in the country that didn't really seem necessary that were being permitted, but there were a lot of restrictions that were being placed on religious worship. And so I think this is one of the reasons why it's been brought to the forefront, where we're able to take a look at it, and even in some cases where we need to be able to push back on some of these things. I think right now one of the things that's really worrying us, and I think this is where Catholic Votes are and Catholic Voice is so necessary. We're really worried about the Hyde Amendment going away and allowing federal funds go toward abortions and contraception and all sorts of these practices that are an intrinsic evil, an act which is always wrong. And so this is why religious freedom is I think on the forefront for us right now. But I think you're kind of spot on. During COVID, it gave us a chance to really look at it and see where some of these restrictions that were being placed on us, and this was just in the terms of worship, you know, were some of them necessary? And we, like I said, we saw some champions start to really push back on that. And we had to get really creative during that time too, and how it was that we were going to have religious services.
Bishop Wall, in a little bit of a way, can it be good, this bit of persecution against the church currently in the U.S.? It's nothing that would cost lives outright, costing the lives of the unborn, but in terms of someone wanting to go to Mass, that opportunity is still there. But this bit of persecution, this pushing down on the church, can that be good to help us to kind of push back a little more strongly?
Well, the church is always strong where she's persecuted. And if we look at the history of the church, you know, we see that, especially in the blood of martyrs, you know, we see the strength of the church, people willing to offer their lives for the sake of the gospel, to make sacrifices for the sake of the gospel. And so sometimes, you know, that might be a really, really big sacrifice, and that would be the sacrifice of your life. But sometimes that can mean maybe your own personal comfort, some of the things that you've maybe taken advantage of or enjoyed, and it requires us to sacrifice some of those things. So it could be big or little. But this requires a bit of a sacrifice. I think if there's one thing that came out of some of the restrictions that took place during COVID is, you know, you don't really appreciate something until you don't have it, or it's taken away, or it's gone, and I think when we didn't have masses, because at the beginning we were so just fearful of this virus, to see what it would do and how many lives it could possibly take. I think when we, at the very, very, very beginning of it, we started to pull those things away, and we were unable to have Mass with assemblies present. I think, you know, as a bishop, I know as priests, you know, we missed giving communion to the faithful, and I know the faithful even more so missed receiving Holy Communion. And so I think those restrictions that were placed during that time, I think hopefully made us think that we, you know, remember that we really do need, we need our Lord in our life, and we need him not just an hour a week, but we need him 24/7. And so I think sometimes when those something's taken away from us, or we're unable to, you know, to take advantage of it, then we can hopefully, maybe we appreciate it a little more.
Bishop Ball, have you seen that that hunger, you know, when we finally were able to get back after things were closed down in some spots for a couple of months, and not so much the battle with the government, but just our own opportunity to be back at Mass? Did you see that hunger, and maybe is there continued since that time a little bit of a resurgence in appreciating what we have kind of thought we always had?
I saw, I remember the when we first started to open up part of our diocese, and you know, my diocese, because we have seven Native American tribes and we're in two different states, and so the restrictions are all different throughout the entire diocese, and so things are a little different. But when I did see us starting to open up in some places, and it was Pentecost the previous year, we saw people in tears, literally in tears, coming back to Mass and coming up to receive Holy Communion and just longing for our Lord, who is the bread of life. And so you were able to see that. And we're not completely there yet in my diocese, just because I mentioned the demographics are different than most. And so there still are some restrictions. And I still do hear stories and see people who are just being able to come back for the first time. And I just hear nothing but appreciation, and appreciation for them being able to practice their faith, appreciation to be able to receive our Lord, the bread of life, appreciation to come to confession, all sorts of just the treasures of our faith. And so we're still seeing that when people coming back. Again, you don't, sometimes you might, the things become a bit too common for you, and our faith should never be common, but they might become a little too ordinary for you, and you might not fully appreciate what it is that you have. And what we have is the richest, the fullness of our faith.
Bishop Wall, just about a minute left, enjoying your time with us this morning as well. The COVID Delta variant rearing its head, many government efforts now, and mass media efforts as well to encourage more vaccinations out there. And it looks like in some corners, masks being required again once more. Will things be looked at differently this time if there is any effort to kind of curtail what can be done in terms of church services?
I think they will be looked. I just speak as one bishop in one diocese, and I think we will look at them differently. There was such an unknown when the pandemic first began, and we heard the potential that just these staggering numbers that could happen. But you know, right now we have vaccinations, which is good. We know different ways in which we're able to keep people safe from the virus, and so there's all sorts of different things that we knowledge that we have now, and things that are accessible to us that we didn't have at the very beginning of all this. So I would say I think things are going to look very different, and in my diocese, I would hope that we could continue to offer masses where the assembly or the faithful are present, and they're able to receive our Lord present in the Eucharist. That was a real tragic. That was probably the most difficult decision I ever made as a bishop, having to make that decision where the faithful couldn't be present for Mass. And so I would hope that I would never have to make that decision again.
Oh, amen to that. We thank you so much for your time, Bishop Wall. If you'd be so kind as to wrap us up with your blessing this week.
Absolutely. May the Lord, who is loving and merciful, may he continue to pour out his Spirit upon you and bless you. May he give you strength, and may he give you courage, so that you may always give witness to his presence and his love in this world. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Bishop James Wall joining us this morning on Morning Air. Morning Air continues now with a look at today's Story Corner. Our story today called A Gold Medal Attitude. Team USA Olympic hurdler Sydney McLaughlin, who just beat her own world record to score a gold for the U.S. in the 400-meter hurdles, referring to a picture of herself at the end of the race. The face of a woman who's in awe of God. She went on to write, "The mental strain of preparing for the rounds in order to solidify your spot is heavy enough, but the amount of weight the Lord took off my shoulders is the reason I could run so freely yesterday. My faith was being tested all week, from bad practices to 3 false start delays to a meet delay. I just kept hearing God say, just focus on me. It was the best race plan I ever could have assembled. I no longer run for self-recognition, but to reflect His perfect will that's already set in stone. I don't deserve anything, but by grace, through faith, Jesus has given me everything. Records come and go. The glory of God is eternal. Thank you, Father." 1 Corinthians 10:31. "So whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God." Great Olympic story for us. It's our Story Corner today. If you'd like to hear that again, or if you missed part of it, check it out in podcast form at our Relevant Radio app. Also, check out Morning Air and the Story Corner at relevantradio.com. Morning Air continues. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk with Jason Adkins from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, how Catholics can better interact with their government. Also, friendship and how Mary can lead us in that direction. We'll talk with Father John Gordon around the corner as Morning Air continues after the news next here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.